It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Fred Zinke. Matthew Leach is not with us this week, but we're happy to have Al Melchior back on the show. I'm sure Al's getting a little bit of much needed rest after a busy fantasy baseball season, but he was kind enough to give us some of his time for our first postseason podcast. Al, how are you doing?
Doing great, Fred. Well, and I hope you're getting some rest as well, because I know it was a big, busy year for you as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, when the fantasy baseball season ends, are you more sad or relieved? Because I find I'm about a 50-50 mix of both. Like, I already miss setting lineups and thinking about, you know, two start pitchers and everything. At the same time, a break is good for everybody. So where do you find that you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a bittersweet mixed feeling for me, too. And I am playing Tout Wars, Fred. There's the daily game that we're playing to benefit the storm victims in Puerto Rico. So I'm getting a little bit of you know, the fantasy fix from that. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, it gives us all a chance to exhale a little bit and watch baseball as baseball fans, which is, you almost forget how to do that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you're right. I will see certain players, you know, hit a home run or strike someone out, and my brain will automatically be triggered to think of the fantasy implications from it. But then you can wipe those out right now. I just watched, you know, so did a lot of us, a great baseball game last night and one the night before. But last night's was, I thought, you know, the Diamondbacks Rockies game, really thrilling. Now, I think the postseason for fantasy owners, I find, is maybe a bit of a landmine. And the reason I say that is really small sample sizes and really stirring moments can sometimes override huge sample sizes from the regular season. So I think that it's like a tough thing for fantasy owners to, you want to watch it and take something from it, but maybe not take too much from it. And I think that maybe some fantasy owners, for example, might have taken too much from it with Javier Baez last season, where he was really good and did some really exciting things for the Cubs in the postseason, and then may have been drafted a little early in some leagues this season. But that being said, there are a few players who I'm keeping my eye on during the postseason, because I kind of want to see how they fare based on some things that I saw during the regular season. The first one I wanted to mention with you is Xander Bogaerts. Now, Bogaerts was always considered kind of a top tier or around the top tier of shortstops, but he had a really disappointing year. I'm interested to see how he fares in the postseason, if he can salvage some of that fantasy reputation. Where do you see Bogaerts next season? Like, is he a top 10 shortstop? Because I don't think he's top five anymore.
No, definitely not top five. I mean, he's just been, you know, leapfrogged by too many players. Top 10, I think so, because, you know, I think that there's, you know, certainly after, the, you know, Lindor, Trey Turner, Elvis Andrews, maybe, I would rank Andrews ahead of Bogaerts at this point, and Machado Correa. I think he's somewhere there in the top 10, but I'm just top of my head thinking, you know, probably more like 8 or 9 as opposed to somewhere in the top 5.
Yeah, and I think I would feel a little better about him, and this may be foolish on my part, but I would feel a little better about him if he hit 300, maybe hit a couple home runs in this series against the Astros, and just maybe finish this season off on a bit of a high note. Like I said, I know it's small samples and everything, but I feel like with Bogaerts, I'm just kind of looking for something, and a pitcher that I'm kind of looking for something with is Yu Darvish. Now, I own Darvish in our Tout Wars League this year, and it was not a great experience. He wasn't awful, and his durability was better than usual, but the ratios were high. You know, he barely reached a double-digit win total. I'd love to see Darvish have a nice postseason to kind of secure that he's maybe a fantasy ace next year, because I'm not sure, even with those swing and miss skills, that he is a number one mixed league starter next year. Do you think he is a one, or do you think he's a two?
I think he's a one, and only just because of my utter lack of trust beyond, and I think we're going to talk about this later on, but really beyond about the top four or so. There's so many question marks with everybody. So the upside that Darvish still has puts him in, I would say, the latter part of, you know, let's say 12-team mixed league, you know, so that top 12, you know, probably closer to 12 than, you know, say to 6. But, you know, at this point, if you're able to, you know, generate well more than a strikeout per inning with you know, the potential for decent control, then that almost sort of automatically lands you there.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of pitchers in this postseason who have a chance maybe to leave a positive fantasy impression. And I'm thinking like Luis Severino, who didn't get off to a great start this postseason, but he'll have more opportunities. I'm thinking Carlos Carrasco, Darvish, Steven Strasburg, Dallas Keuchel. Like, there's a lot of pitchers there who have reason to be in that second tier of starters, but then also maybe reason to put them at the back end of that second tier of starters. So I could see there's so many of them and they're on different teams that chances are at least one of them will kind of push his name up maybe to the front of that group. Someone who's probably a little lower, but I'm interested in seeing how he fares is Sonny Gray. And we may see him twice just in the first in the ALDS, but, and maybe even more beyond that, depending on how the Yankees do. But I don't know where I exactly have Gray at this point in the offseason, because I don't think he's even a number two. So maybe he's a number three, but I do think maybe he has a bit of number two potential in a full season on the Yankees. Do you think I have him maybe appropriately valued, or am I too high or low?
No, I would say right on the nose, because I do think that, again, because of just the lack of reliable options, that Gray, I think, could be your number two, but certainly would be more of a fallback option for me there than for somebody I would be targeting. So I'd be happy to have him drop to be my number three starter. And I think he's just right on that cusp in that sense. So in or around the top 25.
Yeah, and I know people talk about the home park and that not being favorable for him, but I don't know. I know the AL East has a longstanding reputation as an offensive division, but when I step back and look at it, it's really early, but I'm not sure that the Blue Jays lineup will be great next year. And I don't really think that the Rays lineup will be great next year. And I'm not sure that the Orioles lineup, it's kind of in the middle, could go either way, maybe kind of boom or bust lineup. And he doesn't have to face his own Yankees lineup. I mean, the Red Sox lineup is solid, not amazing without David Ortiz now. So I'm not that scared of owning Gray in that ballpark, in that division. But I would love to see him maybe throw a couple quality starts against some good postseason opponents. And that would kind of, get me off to, just a good note when I start ranking players for 2018. We're going to talk most of this podcast about the early rounds for 2018 drafts. Before we do, I want to take just a minute to tell everyone about the Cut 4 podcast. The Cut 4 cast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section. It focuses on the lighter side of baseball. And if you've made it this far into our podcast, which this week, I guess, is not very far, but we think you'll really enjoy it. It'll make you laugh and show you the lighter side of baseball. You'll learn something about baseball, dogs, or ballpark food. Last week's episode broke down Addison Russell's nacho-centric collision with a fan, frame by frame, before getting an early on MLB awards season by handing out the coveted 2017 Best Baseball Old Man title and several others. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut 4 Cast. That's C-U-T, the number 4, CAST in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. Now we're going to talk about the early rounds of 2018 drafts. Al, I think it's just too early in the offseason to get into, sleepers and potential busts and 2018 rookies, but pretty early in the offseason, you can have a fairly light conversation kind of looking at the initial two or three rounds, because they shouldn't really be heavily impacted by the postseason. And probably most of the players in those rounds aren't going to switch teams in the off season. So with that in mind, I want to bring up a few players and a few topics and kind of get your feedback on them. Some of them are topics that Matthew and I have discussed a lot lately, and some we haven't really touched at all. And my first question for you is a really simple one. Mike Trout should be the first pick in every 2018 draft, right?
Right. he would have, I would assume, have been a consensus MVP if he had played anywhere close to the full season. As it was, he missed about 30% of it. And still, in terms of roto value, ranked on the ESPN player rater, he was 22nd overall. Not among outfielders, but 22nd overall, despite missing about 30% of the season. And for batters that had at least 500 plate appearances, he had the highest WOBA in the majors, which is my go-to kind of one-stop shop to measure overall offensive production. So, and he gives you the steals, he gives you something in every category. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree. I will admit that I love the consistency and durability of Jose Altuve. And for me, he's probably my number two right now, without having gotten really deep into projections. But he's probably my number two right now just because he never goes on the DL. He hits for average. He steals bases. He hits home runs. But even with that, even with Trout having missed time this year, I'm with you. I can't see anyone taking someone other than Trout. I think if you're in a wonky league that pitchers are really valuable and you take a pitcher first, then I would suggest that you review your league setup, because I think Trout in any reasonable fantasy league should go first overall. And now I want to jump back to something Scott Pianowski from Yahoo mentioned last week. We had a great conversation with Scott. Scott's a big Francisco Lindor fan. So am I, but Scott took it to a level that I wasn't willing to go to when he said that he could see Lindor as a potential first round pick next season. Now Lindor has been durable. The power was up this season and he can steal some bases. I'm not sure if I have him there though. Al, do you see where Scott's coming from, or do you think Lindor is not really a first round consideration next year?
I'm guessing I'm going to be sort of in between where you guys are on Lindor, because I think that it's defensible to take Lindor if you're at the turn. But, I have not done, any kind of firm rankings yet. But, sort of just looking at the landscape and say, well, who might be a first rounder? And there's so many players in the shortstop mix. There's so many players in the outfield mix there that are so close together that, if somebody wanted to take Lindor over Trey Turner, if somebody wanted to take him even over Carlos Correa, I could see it. I'm not sure in the end where I'm going to come down on that, but he is, I think, defensible as the first shortstop taken overall, and 11th or 12th would not be a bad place to nail down your choice at that position. So
yeah,
is he a must draft in the first round? No way. Is it defensible? I think it is.
Yeah, I think I'm going to end up with him probably more around 15th, maybe more, actually even more like 20th. I think I'll have Turner higher than him, probably Correa too. I can see the really high floor with Lindor, though, just viewing him as durable, and that now he has these power skills. And even if the power skills were to decline a little bit, it's possible it could be offset by maybe his batting average going up a little bit because it dropped a bit this year. Maybe the higher batting average helps him get a few more chances to steal bases. I do see him as a very high floor player. Now, another player who I see as high floor right on his own team is Jose Ramirez. Would you rather have Lindor or Ramirez if you were drafting right now?
I would rather have Lindor. And looking at these two players a little more in depth, before I started that, to me it was just, Lindor easily. And there was less that separated them than I expected. But I still think Lindor, at the very, very least, gets benefit of the doubt for me just by virtue of being a couple years younger. So, whether either one will replicate the sort of power that they showed this year. Fred, I talked a little bit on another podcast about my lessons learned from the season. And I feel like the thing that maybe I did that hurt me the most was put too much stock in players who broke out or apparently broke out in 2016, and kind of putting too much weight on the one season. And so I probably will overcompensate with Lindor and Ramirez in that regard, because we haven't seen this kind of power from either one of them before. And it certainly didn't look fluky, but I certainly would favor the players who have done it more than once.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's something that's going to drive a lot of fantasy discussion where going into next season, where we've seen so many players push their power totals up. And some of that, a lot of that seems intentional, like an approach change and players hitting the ball hard. But we'll have to, a lot of 2018 leagues will ride on which owners can correctly figure out the players who have made a sustainable power jump and which ones, mm-hmm. had a career year and are going to come crashing down. Now, someone who I don't know if he's made this sustainable of a power jump is JD Martinez. So Martinez hit home runs at a rate this season that really matches anyone and would have been right up there with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton in the home run race if he didn't start the year on the disabled list. Stanton's considered widely considered a first-round pick next year. I think Judge is widely considered a first-round pick next year. So should Martinez be widely considered a first-round pick next year?
Well, yeah, I think if you set it up that way, then the answer is yes, because I think that they're very comparable. And in fact, I might even put Judge just slightly behind Stanton and Martinez, because I've got some skepticism about he did it this year, but I have some skepticism about him next year keeping pace with them in terms of batting average. And, you know, he's young, so he may cut back on the strikeouts, much like Stanton did this year. I mean, quite remarkably how much Stanton shaved his K rate. So maybe Judge does that, but you know, in the first round, I wouldn't want to necessarily draft Judge banking on that. Martinez is not, you know, a low strikeout guy either, but he's got a history of being pretty good on balls in play, squares the ball up. So I feel pretty confident about Martinez delivering basically Stanton-like power with a better chance of a good batting average. So
yeah, he
deserves every bit of the benefit of the doubt that both Judge and Stanton do.
Yeah, I felt like maybe late summer, there was a lot of buzz for Joey Votto and Freddie Freeman to be first-round picks. Then Martinez just went wild with his power, and now he's hitting for power that those players just can't touch. And he's also was hitting 300 this season. So now I feel like maybe he's jumped over those players. Again, I'm going to have to step back and look at that a little bit. And with Martinez, there's the big caveat that if he's on to the Diamondbacks again next year, that makes him much more attractive than if he were to sign a free agent contract with the Giants or something like that in the offseason.
Yeah,
like out of all the free agents, park effect may matter more with Martinez because we're counting on him for elite power if we're taking him in the first round. May matter more with Martinez than just about any other player.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Although I went back and looked at last year, you know, which was all with the Tigers, although he missed a good chunk of the year with injury. But he actually hit more homers at Comerica Park than he did on the road. So he just may be sort of like Stanton, one of these players who transcends park factor because he has so much power. And he was right up there with Stanton and Judge in terms of average fly ball distance this year. So I don't really worry about park factor with any of those three, which is, you know, reassuring, you know, not knowing where Martinez is going to wind up.
Yeah, I think what we're realizing as we discuss all these players is that the back end of the first round in 2018 may not be such a bad place to be, because like we've already talked about players like Lindor and Judge and Martinez and Votto and Freeman, and it's quite easy even in a 15 team league to pick a couple of these players late in the first round on that 1-2 turn, whether you're last in the first round or maybe 13th in the first round, something like that. So there's lots that we haven't mentioned, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and lots of other players, so. And the pitchers as well. So, I mean, the back end of the first round may be more. Do you think it may be a little more appealing now that there's just so many good offensive players in comparison to a couple of years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that because there's so much offense and there's so much power now, it all gets cheapened a little bit. But, you know, there with Martinez, you know, sort of gradually rising to this level, I've got some confidence in him being able to repeat it. So you've either got players, you know, like him, like Lindor, who, you know, have been showing some steady improvement, you know, along with players like Judge who have just burst onto the scene with such extreme numbers that you have to have some confidence even if there's regression. So, yeah, I think that there's a bounty of offensive talent that you can rely on that makes having a pick, you know, at or near the turn a pretty nice thing. And just to get back to Martinez too, right now I'm doing the too early mock that Justin Mason from Fangraphs set up. And I was able to get JD Martinez with the 21st pick overall. So while, you know, if you're sitting there at 12 and Martinez is still there, or for that matter, Lindor, and I think either one would be viable there, you might be able to get either one, you know, considerably later if you know, you're picking earlier in the first.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I feel like this wasn't the case a couple of years ago, but you can look at someone like Martinez, whether it's late first, whether it's second round, you can compare him to hitters who are going to go fourth or fifth overall, whether we're talking Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, Bryce Harper. And the difference isn't that great. Like there's a difference I can see a little bit. Like Arenado seems to drive in 130 runs every year. Goldschmidt combines the plate skills with some steals. But the difference isn't as massive, I feel like, as it was, you know, where like you look at Joey Votto or JD Martinez and you think to yourself, he could just as easily have a great season, right? As those players maybe who are picking fourth, fifth, sixth, those could be tough spots to pick next year where you feel like there isn't that, like you don't hold a big advantage over the player late in the first round. Do you see it that way?
absolutely to play that way. And it's going to be difficult, I think, just like in this mock draft that I'm doing, this early mock draft. I mean, it's the first couple of rounds. There's too many good choices.
Yeah, no, I want to mention one other player who maybe is a little bit of the eye of the beholder is whether he's a good choice or not, and that's Chris Bryant. Now, as far as, you know, OPS goes, I've seen a lot of this on Twitter. Mike Petriello, MLB.com StatCast analyst and really bright baseball mind, has pointed this out on Twitter a few times. You know, last year, Bryant won an NL MVP in a 939 OPS. This year, he's not even being really discussed. He has a 946 OPS, and last year he was a top five fantasy pick. And this year, I don't know where he's going to go, because although the OPS is basically the same, he lost 10 home runs, he lost 29 RBIs, he lost 10 runs scored. He didn't improve notably in any area, 3 points on his batting average. That's not really going to cut it. So where are you at with Bryant now? Like, is he a 40 homer type player, or is he a 30 homer type player? Because the difference is probably the difference between him being a first rounder and maybe barely even a second rounder.
You know, I mean, I don't know him if he's going to be more of a 30 or a 40, but I would probably draft him more like he's closer to 40, because, you know, he's still, you know, he's going to be 26 next year. So there's still some room for growth there. And I just think the chances of him improving on 29 homers this year is better than him sticking at 29 or regressing further. I think the chance of him regressing further. I mean, what instance can you think of somebody in their mid 20s who goes backwards for more than one season? I think there's probably a lot of instances we can think of somebody who's in their prime or approaching their prime who has an off year. And then, you know, finds their level again, as opposed to somebody who just drops off and stays there. So, you know, basically just three seasons under his belt, this is another case where I don't want to be overconfident with a limited sample. But based on, you know, the history I've seen with other players, I just think his chances of rebounding are much better than even just stagnating where he's at. And I would also just add that in terms of, you mentioned the big drop in RBI, some of that is almost certainly due to a decrease in power this year, but Bryant hit just .237 with runners in scoring position, and I don't expect him to do that again next year.
Yeah, he's really fascinating to me, because I would have said going into the season that he's one of the very, on a very short list of the most powerful players in baseball. And then when in a season where the big story player selling out for power, when I look at his changes from 2016 to 17, 20 more walks, 26 fewer strikeouts. So that's all good, but fewer fly balls, close to 30 fewer fly balls hit by this season. So just a bit of a different approach with him, getting on base more often, which is really good. But the fewer fly balls, you know, we'll see. I could see kind of seeing the difference in putting him around 35 homers next year. I still think he's a really exciting talent. And in that, you know, tail end of the first round group. Now, someone who's, I think, was in that group before this season, but has cleared that group now probably is Charlie Blackmon. Now, no matter which rating system you look at, whether you're looking at Yahoo, you're looking at ESPN, whatever player rater system you're looking at, he's probably one of the two most valuable fantasy players in 2017. Does that mean that after Trout, he should be one of the two next hitters picked in 2018?
I would say no to that, and I would also say no to him being one of the top three outfielders even. And just like with Bryant, where I'm able or I'm willing to give him, you know, some benefit of the doubt because of his age. Blackmon had this power spike, kind of an out of nowhere power spike, at age 31. So if I'm not counting on that, I'm basically counting on him to, you know, have good core splits. And I'm not able to count on him to get stolen bases, because both in terms of sheer numbers and in terms of efficiency, that's been in decline. So, you know, unless you're just, you have the confidence that he's going to maintain this level of home run power, I think you're going to be sorely disappointed taking him in the top three overall, or like I said, even among the top three outfielders, which probably would mean somewhere in the, you know, top six or seven.
So you see him as more of a like from your own rankings, you think he'll come out as more of a back end first round pick?
I would say probably second round. And I realize that probably means I'm not getting Charlie Blackmon next year. Yeah. And I'm good with that. I underrated him going into this year. So maybe I just wind up being victimized by that 2 years in a row. But I just think stacking him up against the outfielders we've already talked about, not only Trout, but you know, Harper, Stanton, J.D. Martinez, Aaron Judge, he just comes up short for me. If I felt like he could steal 20 some bases, it'd be different. But he may not even get five.
I can see. I like Blackmon. I generally like to invest in hitters, but I will say that I can see the basis for your argument. I mean, 14 steals and 24 attempts means that it's probably reasonable to project something like 10 steals next year, maybe a little more than that, but not 15. Hit fly balls. Like his home run totals are going up, but the amount of foot balls he's hitting are not going up. 137 runs scored is not really sustainable, and neither is 104 RBIs from a leadoff hitter. Like that's just not sustainable. So if you just bump him back towards like 5 RBIs, maybe more like 110 runs, still nice numbers. Back him towards like 30 home runs, 10 steals, you know, and it looks like he can hit, I don't think he hit 31 again, but it looks like he hit high batting in the 300. Still very good, but you're right. If you shave a little bit off everywhere, right, then next thing you know, you've taken one of the top couple hitters for this year, and now he's maybe as you said, maybe a second round pick. I think I'll end up keeping him in the first round, but we'll see how things play out. But I think maybe we've collectively come up with the point that Blackman's maybe at risk of being overdrafted by some people who just look at his 2017 fantasy production. Is that right?
No, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. The last hitter that I want to mention before we talk about some pitchers is D. Gordon. Now, Gordon's fascinating to me just in that it depends on the rating system you look at again, but he was basically around a top 20 asset season because there are so few players out there who steal bases. That being said, I think in a lot of drafts next year, I don't think he'll even be one of the top 30 picks. He's not an old player yet. He's not young, but he's not an old player yet. There are very few base stealers out there. Gives you a tremendous, you know, advantage in that category. Do you think owners are giving him too little credit, or do you think maybe it's too risky to put all of your steals eggs into that one D. Gordon basket? Or, you know, kind of same question with Billy Hamilton, Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Because really, I think your plan for steals is to draft one of those three players, or you find ways to spread your steals out.
It ultimately depends on what your approach is. And I've, over the years, come to be very comfortable with the approach of putting steals together piecemeal. Because if something happens, you know, if they're hurt or they just have an off year, you stand to lose a lot more than from somebody who's got a more well-rounded profile. And I think it's a little unfair maybe to say that Gordon is steals only because he scored 114 runs this year. And I think he could be a big run producer next year, but it really depends on what happens to the Marlins and what happens to Gordon. You know, I don't know if Gordon would be on the block, but, you know, let's say he stays there and Stanton's traded and, you know, I don't know what other moves that the Marlins might make. But, pretty good offense this year. If it's worse next year, I would worry a lot about D. Gordon's value. So, you know, you talked about J.D. Martinez before, and, you know, his free agency. I think, you know, D. Gordon's fate, whether he moves from Miami or not, is something that would, I think, have a bigger impact on his value for next year. Because the runs are definitely non-trivial. But you know, to kind of circle back to your original question, I think he's being appropriately valued because I think there are other cheaper ways and equally effective ways to build up your steals.
I want to move on and talk a little bit. And Matthew and I have discussed this topic at length, so I'd love to get a third-party opinion on it. There seems to be a clear top four at starting pitcher for next year's draft: Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, and Corey Kluber. But ordering them is really tough. And maybe we aren't even done that decision on ordering them until we see how the postseason goes, although we probably, for four such great pitchers, shouldn't change their order. Really, like objectively, we shouldn't probably change their order based on a couple post starts. What order would you have them in? tracking right now?
I would go right now Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber in that order. And I don't know that I said right now because they're so close that maybe there's something I discover between now and next March or even sooner that changes that. It's really, really close. And I'm very concerned about Kershaw because the high home run rate and the change in the hard contact rate, the average fly ball distance, things that would support that. If those are going to be continuing trends for him, that's really going to knock him out of the top spot. But I'm just willing to put a lot of weight into Kershaw's very extended track record of being so much better than everybody else. So I'm going to keep him number one. And as far as Scherzer goes, pitching in the NL at Nationals Park gives him a bit of an edge over Sale and Kluber for me. And then I give the edge to Sale over Kluber because I trust him more for strikeouts.
Yeah, I think right now I have Chris Sale fourth. Matthew and I talked about it last week, and the longer we get into the offseason, I feel like I may have to move Sale up. It's hard for me to reconcile in my own mind having someone who struck out over 300 batters fourth in the next season starting pitcher rankings. And strikeouts aren't like home runs right now. It's not like Sale got 300 strikeouts, but then a whole bunch of other pitchers got 280. He got 300 strikeouts, and no one was anywhere near him. So I may end up moving him up. But those seem to be the clear top four. Al, do you think that all four of them are first-round picks next year?
I would say so. I mean, I tend to be less aggressive in going after pitching early, but I think it's more than fair for each of them.
Yeah, and then I have one more pitcher question for you, and this one I think is going to dance around a lot between now and February, but who's number five among starting pitchers? If the drop-off after those four seems pretty substantial, but someone has to be number five and has to kind of head up that second tier. Who do you think it will be, or do you have a couple names you think it could be?
Yeah, I'm not sure who it will be, to be honest. I mean, I guess I would lean towards the player that I think it should be, and that's Steven Strasburg. But I'm going to tell you something. I mean, this is going to probably sound really convoluted, but probably if I missed out on the big four, Strasburg's probably not the pitcher I'm taking, even if he's there, say in the second or third round, because there's so much uncertainty and there's so much bunchiness in that next tier of starting pitchers that unless like all the owners in my league are just waiting on their number one starter and it's like, oh, I'm in the fourth round, I can still get Steven Strasburg, or maybe the fifth round, maybe then I would take the gamble. But I'm holding out for Chris Archer. Because I think after this season, he's going to be undervalued. That was certainly the case in the two Lily mock that I'm doing right now. And I did take Archer in that draft. Because if it comes down to Strasburg, Severino, Darvish, DeGrom, that group of pitchers where I see that there's so much risk of different kinds with all of them. I think Archer's got the best strikeout upside of the group. And if he can just shave off a few home runs, I think he winds up being the best. I'm not certain of it, which is why I'm not ranking him fifth. And like I said, I don't think he's the fifth best right now. But I'd rather take care of other needs first and make Archer my SP1 fallback.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a good draft strategy to start with three or four position players and then maybe almost go in rounds four and five, or even five and six, depending on your league size. The big difference is 10-team leagues and 15-team leagues when you get to round four. But yeah, starting with Archer and then someone else you like kind of almost back-to-back and having a low-end ace but a high-end number two that could end up being a better strategy, like you said, than reaching out for someone like Strasburg. I think if the Giants have some sort of respectable offseason, I think I put Madison Bumgarner back at number five. I know he was higher than that this year, but I think just, outside of that off-field accident, he has been really durable and consistent and effective. I'd like to see the Giants give me some reason to believe that he could get the run support to get at least 15 wins next year. And then I think I would put him there. But do you think would you consider Bumgarner ahead of Strasburg if the Giants look notably better by February?
Maybe, because that's definitely part of what I worry about with him and with DeGrom, by the way, which is why I, you know, kind of lumped him in with that other group. So, yeah, I think that would make a difference for me with Bumgarner. I do worry a bit about Bumgarner, maybe, you know, his best days maybe being behind him and overpaying for him when he might be starting some decline. But he's right in there with the others, and a beefing up of the Giants offense would move him up, if not ahead of Strasburg. You know, it would certainly make it interesting.
Al, I really enjoyed this conversation today. I know that our first and second and third rounds are going to bounce around a lot, but I think this is the kind of topic that people who love fantasy baseball like we do can kind of get into in October if they still want to get a little bit of a fantasy fix while they're watching postseason games. And check out the mock drafts. Like, Al, you mentioned you're participating in one. We typically do one with our site at some point during October. So just check out those early mock drafts, and it starts to give you a little bit of a feel for – I think you would agree that that's a really valuable exercise for owners. It starts to give you a little bit of a feel for how those early rounds are shaking out without having to get into the – like the nitty gritty of the middle and late rounds this early in the off season.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I'll admit every year I kind of have this nagging feeling that it's, you know, oh, I'm just sort of, you know, looking for an excuse to think about fantasy baseball. But it really is, it's a useful exercise, not only for looking ahead, but sort of taking in what's happened in the past year and trying to make sense of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to close in a typical Matthew style, and I'm going to say thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Al Melchior, for taking the time to talk.